The following program is closed captioned for the thinking impaired.
Welcome to the latest edition of Chat with a Cat. This is the pre-creation draft podcast where we'll be talking a little bit about drafting strategies. I've thought a little bit about, you know, what I would like to put out there before the draft started, just to kind of get people thinking. I remember back to the original PBSL draft, and maybe it's because I was running the Hawks at the time, and the joke was the old Atlanta Hawks, because where I wound up in the draft order, I wound up drafting mostly older players to be good now, which I think is a valid strategy. But I wanted to talk about some of the different strategies that we might expect to see as we go into the draft. So as you're doing your own draft prep, you may or may not find this useful. I'm not going to talk very much about individual players, except as it relates to these players being examples of some of the questions that have come across my mind as I prepare to get into the creation draft. I didn't want to do this too early. I've had a time to kind of sit and stare at the players and kind of figure out what I think might be something that would be useful for those that haven't had a chance to go through a creation draft before. So hopefully this will be of use to some people. This will be, I think, my fourth creation draft across two or three different sim engines. So take this with a grain of salt. I may have no idea what I'm talking about. I may have an agenda that I'm trying to force you down the wrong direction, but hopefully you will find something in this podcast useful or entertaining. And as I get ready to start this, I notice that it looks like we've already had a draft selection.
They ask you how you are, you just have to say that you're fine when you're not really fine, but you just can't get into it because they would never understand.
So I think this is how most of the league feels right now. It looks like the Suns have just put in the first pick and Magic Johnson is off the board. I don't know of anybody that thought he wouldn't be off the board at the number one pick, but now it's official. And talking about Magic Johnson kind of segues nicely into talking about the old Atlanta Hawks when the PBSL was first created. We started the draft, I believe, in 1990, and so Magic Johnson at that point was 31 years old. And I believe he was my first draft pick, and oddly enough, Moses Malone, who I suspect would be the second or third draft pick, was my second round pick. Of course, Moses was 35 at the time, Magic was 31. And so that takes us into talking about the first general thing that I'll be curious to take a look at as we draft here. We are fortunate in this draft in that there are a lot of the top players that are relatively young. And so the first thing I'm kind of curious to see as things shake out is what is going to be considered quote unquote old as we get into the draft, and are teams drafting for now or are they drafting for the future? The obvious example of a player who is very good, if you look at the mock draft board, it looks like he's going to be among the first players taken, is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He's also 33 years old, and you can probably anticipate that as good as he is now, he is not going to get any better, and as time goes on, he's going to get worse. And so this is the first question that you need to ask yourself when you are preparing to do a creation draft is, am I trying to set myself up to win now or win in the future? Excuse me, I'm battling a bit of a cold here. And so players like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and I'm just going to grab some of the 30-somethings at the top of the board here. Jurelius Irving is 30. Artis Gilmore is 31. So you might see people staying away from these players, and they might drop a little farther than they all were, than they otherwise might if you were drafting for a single season, because I think a lot of people will be drafting with an eye to the future. And then that leads to the very interesting question of what is the age that people consider old? Obviously, Magic is 21. He's the youngest player at the top of the board here. But if you look at the ages of most of these players, you know, you see 22, 23, 24. Obviously, those are going to be kind of on the young end. 26, 27, 28. Is that where people draw the line? Is 30 where people draw the line? Looking at training for players, is 30, 31 where people draw the line? Because they won't, they'll be able to expect players to start declining, or maybe they can train them for cheaper. It's just something always interesting that that I like watching when a draft is going on, is finding out who is throwing caution to the winds and going to try to win now regardless of age, and who is trying to build for the future by sticking to, you know, let's just take an arbitrary number and say, you know, 25 or younger. And what that will mean is probably as you go to rounds 2 and 3, you're letting better players go because you're worried they're going to decline, and picking players that are maybe a little bit worse now in the hopes that you'll be able to get more seasons out of them. So the question is, do you think you can compete this season? Do you think you'll be competing next season? Do you have a 3-year plan, a 4-year plan? Are you planning to suck for the 1984 draft? All things to consider here. And if you are planning on sucking for the 1984 draft, maybe you do want to load up on older players because they'll give you a chance to win now. And by the time we're in the 1983 season, they'll be on the decline and you'll have a chance to do well in the lottery. This then brings me to the next thing about drafting, and I think I've made this theory public before. One of the things I always enjoyed doing when I was team building in previous iterations is I would always look for a player that was an outlier for his position with his skill set. As a particular example, we can look to Magic Johnson, who has a ridiculously good defensive rebounding rating of 63 for a point guard. That 63 is perhaps a little bit misleading, because if you've looked over this draft, you'll note that centers, power forwards, and even small forwards are excellent rebounders. But compared to most other point guards whose rebounding is trash, Magic is very, very good. In a previous iteration of the game, some people may remember I took Joakim Noah as a center because I was enamored with his high passing rating for a center. It was a passing rating that looked closer to a point guard's. And so when you get a player who has a very high rating at an odd in an odd area for his position, I think it allows you to make better matchups. And perhaps it also allows you to get away with players who are slightly worse than average for that at their position in other places. For example, if I have Magic Johnson, I might be able to skimp a little bit on my center or my power forward's defensive rebounding in order to make sure I'm strong in some other area. So that is also something that I always think is interesting, is taking a look at how people view outliers and what kind of value outliers have put on them. And as we see the draft unfold, we're certainly going to see some of that. Obviously, you know, Magic is the easy example, but if you're looking around for players with high ratings in odd places, you know, you're looking for, say, a center with a high passing rating, a guard with a high rebounding rating, maybe even a center with a high steal rating or a guard with a high block rating. So these are all things to pay attention to. One of the other things that you can talk about when you're team building is whether you subscribe to the idea of balance or specialization. But by what I mean on this is, how do you intend to build your team? I have built teams where my big focus was on defensive ratings. There was another engine that kind of gave you the players' shooting efficiency. So I focused on a bunch of players that didn't take a bunch of shots but were efficient when they did. And also focused heavily on defense to drive down my opponent's field goal percentage on the theory that even if we didn't take quite as many shots, we'd make them more often and therefore we would win. I've also seen attempts to build a strong passing team on the theory that strong passing is going to try to lead you to assists, which will lead you to more makes than your ratings might otherwise grant you. Some people like to focus on controlling the glass. Some people like to focus on steals or blocked shots. And so if you are the kind of person who likes to specialize, you might be willing to, let's say, give up something in your ball handling in order to have a high shot blocking crew. And, you know, does that strategy work? I think it depends on matchup. I think generally a specialist strategy as far as a team goes, where all of your players are really good at a certain thing, tends to be a good, I don't want to say gimmick, but a good team building strategy in the regular season when teams can't prepare for you. It becomes a little less good in the playoffs, where teams can scheme for you and they can adjust matchups to try to take advantage of the places where your team is weak and to minimize your advantage in the places where your team is strong. By the same token, a balanced team is generally tough to build because you always feel like you've got one or two holes that you need to fill and that can be exploited. But it also tends to be a lot more flexible when playoffs come around. So if you watch for teams that load up on a certain attribute, whether they're going for rebounding or defense or whatever else, you'll be able to see whether or not teams think that they can get over in the regular season and they want that home court advantage for the playoffs, or whether they're building more for the playoffs and hoping that by having a versatile team that can swing things around and create mismatches, they'll be able to succeed when things really matter. Generally, as far as home court advantage goes in fast break, I think it's a minor advantage. It's certainly not, you know, going to be chalk all the way through the playoffs, but I do think it's worth trying to get probably a top four seed for sure, a top two seed maybe. Obviously, you'd always like to be the one seed because it means you're probably the best team. But if you're looking for those little edges, being the three or four seed as opposed to the five or six seed is usually a difference of two or three games. And that can often be done by specialization. But again, when you get into the playoffs, you're going to have, you know, plans to deal with your deficiencies as your opponents attempt to exploit them. One of the other things that I've always thought was interesting in creation drafts in general, and this is regardless of sim engine, is the concept of runs on a position. You're probably familiar with this, say, from fantasy football drafts, where you know, generally there are a lot of productive quarterbacks. But once two or three running backs are selected in a row, there's suddenly a run on running backs because everyone is worried about missing out because they know there's only a certain number of productive players of that type. And I do think it's interesting to watch these kind of trends emerge in creation drafts. Sometimes you'll see runs on point guards. I've seen runs on bigs. I haven't really ever seen a league where there's been a run on shooting guards and small forwards. I think that's probably because based on the way most sim engines run, small forwards and shooting guards tend to Be productive and tend to be highly rated because they're not specialists. Generally, your point guard is a ball handling and passing and maybe perimeter defense specialist. Your big is a rebounding, shot blocking, and post defense specialist, where your shooting guard and small forward probably aren't the greatest in either defensive area, not blocks, not steals, not post or perimeter, but they're good enough in everything. And they also tend to be the highest scorers. And I think that's just a product of where the NBA has been over the past 40 to 50 years. If you look at the best scorers in the NBA, until Steph Curry came along, I think from about 1950s through 1975, 76, 77, it was almost always big men. And then into the 80s through the 2020s, it was generally your wing players. Obviously, there are outliers. You had Allen Iverson in the 90s, who was a very small point guard, who was a prolific scorer. You had Pistol Pete Maravich in the area of the big men. But generally, the era that we're familiar with, your small forwards and your shooting guards are relied upon for the bulk of your scoring. But we are in an era, from a sim point of view, where centers were still dominant. And you could get good production out of big men. And so, we know that there will be some pretty good big men coming up over the next 5-10 years of drafts. And there will be a lot of guards coming up as well, of the shooting and small forward variety. There are a couple of outstanding point guards, but I think you really don't see a renaissance in point guards until the early 2000s. Obviously, Magic Johnson is kind of an outlier in his own stratosphere. But one of the things that I do notice is there are a lot of very good point guards available at the top of the draft board here. If you look just at the mock draft, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, I think 6 or 7 of the mock 23, so that's a quarter of the players, are in fact point guards. And so it will be interesting to see if there is, not due to Magic Johnson, but as other point guards come off the board. Once you get out of the top 8 to 10 point guards, I think the quality really falls off, especially when you're looking for young point guards. So I think it will be very interesting to see if we start this draft after the couple of superstars with a run on point guards. The other position that I think we're seeing is a little bit thin on the ground, at least at creation, is the power forward position. This is still a time when the league was dominated by centers. And so I also think it will be interesting to see who decides to run a quote-unquote center, as they're listed in the draft class, as their power forward. I think we'll see a lot of opportunities for teams to run the Twin Towers. Of course, the flip side to that is I did notice that there were several small forwards with excellent rebounding abilities. So maybe people will be just happy to play their small forwards as bigs, and we'll get into small ball, as it were, a couple of decades early. Not sure about that. That will be interesting to watch. The other thing that I always find interesting about a snake draft, which creation drafts almost always are, otherwise the top pick would have an exceptional advantage, is seeing teams toward the top and the bottom of the draft, when they get to picks that are back-to-back or very close to it, how they tend to, I guess I would say, start new runs, because what can happen is a team toward the back end, let's say there's been a run on point guards, and we get around to the last 5 picks. Generally, that's when the run stops, because they'll go for best player available with their pick at the end of the round, and then pick a point guard at the top of the next round, knowing that there will still be some quality players there. The people that are drafted in the middle of the rounds, I think, are more susceptible to runs. I think, you know, we've got 23 picks per round. I think you're probably going to see most of the runs on position happen between about picks 6 and 18. Because when you're picking sixth, you know you're not going to get another pick until the draft swings back around about 45 players later. And by that point, if you're looking for a specific position, the quality of player is going to be way, way less than it was before. And so, you know, as an example, with the Lakers, or the Lakers, the Suns, excuse me, obviously Magic Johnson and the Lakers are welded together in my mind, but the Suns picking Magic Johnson, yes, they have a great player, but who are they going to pair him with? They don't have another pick until like the 46th pick in the draft. And so it does mean that they're going to have to figure out how to build a team around him with maybe not quite the balance that other teams have. And the same thing will go for the other top picks, you know, the Birds and the Malones. You know, these are our purple potential players. I don't think I'm spilling any secrets by guessing that Larry Bird and Moses Malone will go number two and number three in some order. If I were to guess, I would guess Bird goes before Malone just based on his age. And it would be interesting to see in this version of reality if Larry Bird's back is able to hold up a little better and he has a longer career than he did in the NBA. I certainly hope so. It would be good to see Larry Legend doing Larry Legend things. One of the last things that I would like to cover in this inaugural podcast here is talking a little bit about what I would call lesser known players. I mean, obviously everybody knows the Johnsons, the Birds, the Abdul-Jabbars. What I've always found interesting is the way that when you're doing a historical draft, you get to discover players that maybe you weren't familiar with, or maybe you only knew as head coaches. And I'm going to kind of go a little bit deep into the list here. And I'm trying to find who it was. I remember seeing somebody started with a T, I think, the last name. Oh, no, Lorenzo Romar, that's it. I always knew him, or I thought of him as a college head coach. I never realized he was an actual NBA player. I knew, for example, that Mike Dunleavy, who was later a coach of the Lakers and the Trailblazers in the NBA, started out as an NBA player. But Lorenzo Romar's there. Also Joe Bryant. Some of you might know him as Jelly Bean Bryant, or Kobe's dad, is in the league. It's fun to see some of these names that you don't often think of. You know, Alan Bristow's another one. I remember him as either a head coach or a general manager, but I don't remember him as a player. And now, granted, I wasn't watching the NBA in the early 80s. I didn't get into it until the late 80s, probably 89. And so some of these players I probably just missed out on. But I always think it's interesting to see in Sim League, I get a view of who these players were and why they were relevant. You know, Quinn Buckner is here. I always thought of Quinn Buckner as the guy on NBC. Quite frankly, I always found him a little bit annoying. So that's something else. You know, once you get out of the, you know, first 5, 6, 7 rounds where you've got your rotation players, you'll be in rounds 8 and 9. You'll see a name like Ernie Grunfeld. I always think of him as the Washington general manager. Why? That's what he did when I became aware of stuff. Henry Bibby, I think of him as, I think it was the USC head coach. And then occasionally you just get funny names like Jim Sparkle. So I'm curious to see, because this is one of the things that I've always loved about Sim Leagues, is not just the how do people do on the court, but what in league mythology grows up around these players, either because there's some connection with something later in real life, or because, you know, they have a funny name, or, you know, they have something that just kind of captures the imagination. As an example, I don't think I'm spoiling anybody's pick here, since this player is an orange current, Foots Walker. I love the name Foots Walker. It's hilarious. And so, you know, will I draft him maybe a little higher than he should go? Might I draft him in, you know, what, the 10th, 11th, 12th round? I might. Why? Because the name's funny. Do I expect him to play? Absolutely not. one of the nice things about playing this is, especially with older players, you do get the chance to learn a little bit about the history of the league, learn about the history of people, and maybe get introduced to some names and some personalities that you didn't know before. And I think that's one of the great ways in which sim leagues touch on reality and history, is they give us the window and the excuse to learn about NBA history or NBA players or people and stories that we didn't already know. You know, for example, you know, you might excuse me. You know, you might remember a player from a bench role on a team you watched growing up, and then you find out he was actually a key player earlier in his career. And so, you know, keeping an eye out for these kind of things is always fun, and it lets us connect Sim League a little bit with reality, and maybe we even make it hyper-reality. You know, you could have some fun with it. I remember one of the leagues that I was in, one of the things that they often did was they did storytelling. And I will never forget the saga of Mike Bibby being verbally abused by the Timberwolves owner. And eventually there was a run-in with Bobby Brown and Tina Turner, and it was just... yeah, this story went on, gosh, 20 odd years ago, but I still find it hilarious. And I know everybody probably thinks, being Whig, I laugh something like this. But, you know, it really is something that I think is unique about Sim Leagues, is for many of us, if we were around in 1980, we were probably small children. We probably were not paying a lot of attention to the league. I think most of us knew these players when they were in their primes, starting in 1980. They're a little bit before their primes, but there are some older players in the league that we maybe didn't know, or at least not as well. I mean, I think of Reggie Theus as that guy from the Saturday morning basketball show on, I don't even remember the network, NBC maybe. So, you know, take the opportunity as we go through the draft to find some funny stories, find some things that maybe amuse you, make some connections to these players, because that's what will keep you plugged into the league, is making connections that are funny or silly. It's not just a math simulation, and I think that's why Sim League is so beautiful. It gives us a chance to develop an alternate mythology, alternate stories. Obviously, in the original PBSL, the monster of monsters was Anthony Davis. And everybody who had to try to deal with him realized how much of a problem that was. You also get alternate realities where players that maybe hated each other in real life are playing next to each other. You get to see combinations of things that maybe you always wanted to see, but that never happened. You know, I mentioned before the original Old Atlanta Hawks, where everybody was over 30, was led by Magic Johnson and Moses Malone. instead of facing off against each other as they did in the early 80s with Philadelphia and the Lakers clashing in the finals, they were working together. And you got to see, you know, what could Moses Malone do with somebody feeding him alley-oops, or at least, you know, that's how I envisioned it. I'm sure the it's just numbers under the hood. Anyway, this has reached about half an hour, and I think that's probably enough for a pre-draft podcast when there's not a whole lot to talk about in terms of actual action. So I will wrap at this point and invite everyone to enjoy the creation draft, pay attention, have fun, and glad to be back. And with that, I will sign off.